Why did Aloy bring a bow to the party?
I don't know why.
Because she knew how to hit it off with everyone.
Why did Aloy break up with the Strider?
Because dating a robot's just generally a bad idea.
Because it just wasn't grazing her interests anymore.
Hey, guys. Why don't the machines ever tell jokes in Horizon Zero Dawn?
Gee, I don't know why, Pascal.
Because they always short-circuit the punchline.
Ah, kind of like how these jokes are short-circuiting the show.
Now this is a story all about how Matt's life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just pet your cat, I'll tell you how Matt became the Prince of Backtrack. In Western Florida, born and raised, in his bedroom is where Matt spent most of his days, chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, playing Nintendo outside of the school, when his homeboy called, who had a podcast show, said, join this site, give it a go. Matt wrote a couple reviews, then paused, took a crack, and said, you're recording a podcast with Kelly called Backtrack. He called for an Uber, and when it came near, the license plates had cats in it and mice in the mirror. If anything, he could say this car caused a fuss, but he thought, nah, forget it, your home's to Kansas. He got to Kelly's house about 8 or 9, and he yelled to the Uber, yo, Holmes, just in time. He looked at Kel's kingdom, and he knew it'd be whack to sit by the throne of the Queen of Backtrack.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the errand to my alloy, Mr. Matt Basem.
I'm not the Zelda to your Link, or like Millennia or something.
I always try to theme it to what we're talking about.
Oh, but like, oh, sorry, wrong. I was thinking the other games that came out that week.
Right? Oh, gotcha.
Oh, boom. Deep cut.
I can't remember any Elden Ring characters' names at the moment. But
Google helps at a pinch.
By Vlad the Wolf to the Rainy the Witch. There you go.
There we go.
I have a fine cast of people that did play this game instead of the more popular games that came out that week. We've got Joshua Carpenter.
Hey there.
Pascal Takaya.
I might have lost an arm this week, but I'm reporting for duty.
And Sam Wachter.
Why do you have me here? Why?
Cause Canadian content loss.
Yeah.
CanCon!
We also need one more person that has actually played the game and doesn't pronounce her as Aloy.
Yeah, my Kelly. Bad. What's the proper pronunciation?
Aloy.
Aloy.
Aloy. I love it.
I am bad with the pronunciation of
it's
things.
Okay. She's not a precious metal.
It's tough. Your brain just wants to put in the extra L because that makes sense.
Yes.
Want to, though. We're talking about Horizon Forbidden West. Yeah, I pronounced that wrong, too.
That's okay, Kelly.
With a little bit of Zero Dawn, since it's been a hot minute since we've talked about Zero Dawn. I guess we could kind of get into how the two games connect and whatnot, but I like many people, ended up getting into the more popular games that released at the same time. I've heard that these are good games, though. I want to get to them. I just have not had time to.
And they are time sinks.
Yeah. My only frame of reference for either game is seeing some of the big robots show up with the dimensional gun in Ratchet and Clank. Because I had sent Josh a screenshot and said, is this from Horizon? He's like, yes.
Is this from that game with Aloy? Yes.
Kelly, just play the Lego one.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It gives you the entirety of Zero Dawn in like one quick game.
And I was gonna say, is it a original story or?
So no, it is Zero Dawn, but what if Lego? So it's the exact story, just obviously they've trimmed some of the fat because you are tiny Lego Aloy, and you know, she's making her friends and doing the jobs, and the way that they treat the sun god and the final monster in it is very funny and has all the charm and humor of the Lego games.
Is she Ashley Birch?
Yes. Good. All the actors returned for the Lego game except for Lance Riddick, because, you know, he did.
Yeah.
But he was replaced by someone from Star Trek Voyager. So there you go. Tim Russ.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, why don't we have a brief musical interlude and me get out my pronunciation guide. And then when we come back, we can talk more about Horizon just as a whole. We'll be right back. Backtrack, where we are talking about Horizon Forbidden West, released on February 18th, 2022 on PS4 and PS5, and then later on Windows on March 21st, 2024. I remember screwing up initially because I thought that this was a PS5 exclusive, and it ruined my blurb for the site because I wanted to put that, and this game gave you a reason to finally buy a PS5. Like, no, it's still PS4.
I played it on PS4.
How did it run?
Questionable at times. I had some good glitches that, like, they still make me laugh even now. So,
no, were you playing on an OG PS4 too? So,
yep,
not even a pro.
I was not playing on a pro. I was playing on the OG. And the best glitch I got was there is a home base where Aloy and her team go back to, and once in a while I would get this glitch where she just falls through the floor and then it would just fall and fall and fall, and I'd have to restart my system. Like, it was just an infinite falling glitch. And I was like,
oh, hey, I just had one of those in Atelier Yuma.
Yep. I was like, there's literally stairs here. How did I fall through?
So he's a crack.
Yep.
Meanwhile, I remember Josh was one of the first among us that ended up with a PS5 and was telling us about him playing it. And during our calls, hearing the haptics over the phone, over the Discord phone, and being like, what is that rattling noise?
I'm glad you remember this. Yeah, it would just go like, you know, they were, it, of course, being one of the early games for, not exclusive, but, you know, built for the PS5. Like, yeah, they crammed in the vibration, the, you know, the haptics on the triggers, all that stuff in. I mean, this was the game that made me go out and buy a second controller, because just playing for like a couple hours, my battery would be dead. You know, I'd pick it up the next night. No, the battery's dead. You got to recharge it again. Oh, yeah, it was that bad.
Yeah, I was happy that my PS5 bundle came with two controllers so that I could swap them out at any given time.
And yeah, it would just make a god-awful racket. It would be
ka-chunk.
On like,
ka-chunk.
On Discord calls.
Did it feel good to play, though?
Well, oh, you mean the incorporation? I mean, you know, it's hackneyed like you'd expect at the beginning. But, like, yeah, you know, it adds to the experience. You know, you have the tension when you're pulling a bow back using the haptics on the triggers. Yeah, it adds to it.
And then, Pascal, what did you play? Played this on PS4?
I played it on PS5.
Oh, okay.
I'm the most recent of the bunch. As in, like, I still picked it up last night and did some more like post game quests.
He did homework.
I did.
Unlike Josh and I, who played it a million years ago and probably like, this game is fantastic. So now I understand why there's tension in that Pascal has opinions and feelings. which are totally fine, and I'm very excited about. Forbidden West, you know.
I was going straight to it.
I, you know what? Look, Zero Dawn, climate change, craziness, punching dinosaurs, best game of that year. Forbidden West, you know, picks up right after, 6 months later, and stuff happens. More climate change, more capitalism, newer dinosaurs to punch.
I think part of the problem is they blew their load on the first game, where, yep. You know, like the big thing was, we've got robot dinosaurs. Why are there robot dinosaurs roaming around? And that's the big thing you're wanting to find out. Yeah. You know, like that's the thing they're holding out there. And once you found that out at the end of the first game, the second game can't quite live up to that anymore.
New.
And well, you got space aliens who are humans.
Which the human space alien, that the whole plot line was dumb. I am going to come out and say it is dumb. One of them looked, I don't know if it was intentional. Oh God, there's an actress that I'm thinking of, and she's in like the Marvel movies, and she's bald in the Marvel movies.
Tilda Swinton.
Why does she look like Tilda Swinton?
I absolutely thought it was her voice actress, or that she was the voice actress, but it was Trinity from The Matrix.
Oh, okay. And I thought I saw her.
Because yes. She looks just like her. That's why.
Yeah.
I would have put money on that. That's Tilda Swinton the entire time.
Exactly, right? Like, it's just like, did they get Tilda Swinton to come and do some mocap? Because, Damn, they spent money. I mean, Carrie Ann Moss is probably, like, she's probably reasonably priced by comparison, but, you know.
The space, the human space alien angle wasn't as dumb as I thought they were going to go with it. I was pretty convinced that this was going to turn into some sort of like Truman Show. Oh, the world hasn't really ended. This is, you know, behind the scenes, there's still human overseers and these are them. I mean, it almost was, but at least they committed to, no, the world really, really is dead and fucked. And
yep.
So I think it could have been slightly worse. That didn't bother me as much, but it was out of left field.
It is an absolutely stupid addition that kind of didn't need to be there. Because, I mean, I was compelled by the fact that, like, for this particular game, the idea of having, like, you know, Aloy defeats Hades, they're searching for a backup of Gaia, and you're basically dealing with the remnants of climate change. Like, that to me is actually interesting, right? Especially as you're kind of going through the different areas and you're seeing things like the environmental effects that they're doing, like when you're going through a sandstorm or, you know, you're walking through like blighted plants. And it's like, yeah, no, like environmentally, there is an interesting story here. And then they went with aliens, and you're like, no.
Well, like, they needed a big boss. Who was going to be their big boss? And then they just had to come up with something.
No, I'm sorry. Aloy could have punched a tornado, and that would have been more interesting. Or else, give me a different robo-dinosaur to be the final boss. Because they added a bunch of new ones that are really freaking cool. But no, we got space aliens. Like, no. Like, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
It went for way heavier sci-fi than I thought they were going to go. In a post-apocalyptic sci-fi game, they doubled down on the sci-fi.
In some respects, I like the story more in retrospect, since when you boil the story down, it's about fighting a bunch of evil tech bros who were, yes. You know, like went off into space and came, you know, screwed things up and are now coming back. And now you get to go and kill them. And I can kind of get down with killing some annoying, you know, space bros.
That part the
demented IT department.
Exactly.
You know what? When you boil elements of the game down, it's a fantastic concept. And I think that's why, for me, you know, like having that space alien angle it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, again, surface level, you're like, yeah, actually, this is hilarious. This kind of works, you know. And again, this is a series that's very open about hating capitalism. And then, you know, you boil it down even further to just being like, by the way, here's climate change, the actual ultimate monster. And it's like, but that was the first game. The second game is now like, no, we want these tech bros to be the ultimate villain. And the hard part is, like, I don't personally care for those elements of the game. For me, it was actually all about just being like Aloy and the friends she made along the way. Because all the new friends were actually interesting.
Yes, and the acting that they have, that they get in the game, is really good.
Yes. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I mean, I was happy to see Erend and Varl, but even some of the new characters, I was pleasantly surprised, because it's like they could have also gone the route of just not really bothering to give Aloy more companions. So.
They didn't, after everybody gets their own little introduction quest, you know, after everybody's introduced by the storyline, then they're just kind of dropped off at the base. And they don't get a lot more outside of, if you're really dedicated and every time you go back to base, you want to talk to everybody about everything. That's the most interaction that you get with them. I think there was one other, well, okay, there's like two other kind of cool like story moments where the whole gang has to go do this, you know, or everybody gets their assignments and breaks off into little groups along the way, and that's neat.
Do you think having the base actually was kind of a detriment to the game? Because, I mean, the first game didn't really have a base, quote unquote. Like in the same way.
Yeah, I thought the idea was amazing. If you play it the way I did, it sucked.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Do you build up the base?
No. I mean, you don't target any specific elements, but it does more or less get unlocked further over time, but not by anything you're doing. It's just story progression.
Okay, gotcha.
Unlike Lego Horizon, where you get Lego money and then you get to restore things.
Hmm. I come from like Zero Dawn was always best for me when I was able to explore the old world ruins and relics and text logs and this and that. And so from that angle, at first, I thought this was going to be such an amazingly intriguing thing to have a base to constantly explore. That's going to just offer up, you know, narrative elements, but it wasn't used for that. And I really hated role-playing this game. And I think I'm not going to do this very much more often, because I've done it a few times with a couple of games in a row where I, for one thing, I refuse to use fast travel.
Yeah.
And every story beat ends on, okay, back to base, and it's way the fuck out there. And every single mission sends you further away from it.
I hate it. So some of this is a Pascal problem.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, no, listen, some of it is, this is an RPG. You want me to RPG an RPG. I played it as, no, I'm okay. It is definitely the way I chose to interact with some of it.
I love you, by the way. I'm just teasing.
So you don't do fast travel because you're stubborn, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
What else is it?
In Pascal's defense, is what I'm going to say. Horizon offers the player the ability to also tame monsters and ride them. So you kind of can cheat some of it by doing that. I mean, do you need to get to a high mountain? Tame one of the flying monsters. You need to, you know, go get something with speed? Tame one of the land ones. Like, there are alternative options. It's just fast travel is the most convenient.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm talking about with the machine aiming, it still takes, sometimes it takes days for me just to make, because of course, you know, it wouldn't even be so bad, the traveling wouldn't be so bad, if I wasn't stopping every 2 seconds along the way to go complete an errand or a side quest or a bandit camp. Oh my god, I got so sick of it.
It's got some Ubisoft syndrome going on, of course.
Oh yeah.
It definitely follows a page from, you know, certain Assassin's Creed. I think that was my problem as to why I enjoyed it. Speaking as the person who put 100 hours into Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Yeah. I have that problem where it's like, I have O'Shiny syndrome. So when I'm playing an open world game, I'll be like moseying around and I'm like, oh yeah, abandoned camp. I'm just going to blow everybody up. And then like 2 seconds later, I'm like, oh man, there's this other thing over here where I need to go help this person. The only thing I wouldn't touch is those stupid proving grounds. I hated those.
Mm, yep.
Hated those. Those are not fun. They're not fun. Like, great, you want to tell me that I need to be like perfect at shooting all these targets and do it. No, Lego did that one better. That being said, I mean, Horizon Forbidden West, it has a lot of really neat ideas. There is some messy execution in spots, I think. I don't think the story is like a full miss. Like, again, I agree with you with like the space aliens angle. It was a little weird. But I'm thinking more along the lines of like, I, for example, really hated how the skill trees were done in this one. I didn't find them rewarding. I didn't find that they added much to the experience. And again, you're only playing as Aloy. So like, she should be beefy. If I'm putting points into things, I want her to be beefier. And half the time I felt like the game did not do a good job of giving me that sense that like, I am a lot more powerful. So that was a part of it for me, for sure.
Out of curiosity, did they give an arbitrary reason why she was powered down in this game compared to the first one?
She wasn't really, I don't think, powered down necessarily. No.
Because that does drive me crazy in sequels that have the exact same character that they have to figure out a reason why they're not maxed out.
It's she's not powered down in any way. It's they decided to make some changes to the skill tree system, and the one in Zero Dawn is just it's better, it's more robust, and you can feel the changes. Whereas here, a lot of the changes don't actually feel like they make a large difference. And I mean, for what it's worth, Aloy is, she's not actually that strong if you're looking at, like, the story, air quotes, right? Like, she's very clever. She knows how to manipulate a situation to her advantage. But, like, in terms of physical beefiness, like, well, Aaron's right there. You send Aaron to do that job because Aaron's a nut job with a giant hammer and, like, biceps the size of, I don't know, Mississippi. So, I mean, this is a series where you don't need to have a, like, overly beefy main character because there are always other ways to do things. Like, you can play Aloy entirely cunning if you wanted to and use things like the traps, or you can use, like, bombs. Like, there is lots of different things you can use. It's just the power-ups on those just, for me, just didn't feel like they were worth it half the time.
And there are a lot of different ways to attack combat in the game. Like, I kind of got into using the bolt blasters, which are, like, these really huge, beefy weapons that shoot just tons and tons, kind of like a machine gun, basically, you know. But they're gigantic. You're like lumbering. You can't really move very quickly. No. Got it. So you got to like maneuver your place yourself into a spot where you've got like the high ground or somewhere you can hide so you can just like rain down terror from on high against the dinos. And then, you know, like duck behind a rock when they start throwing stuff at you.
Yep.
I did all those things in the first game. In this one, I pretty much just stuck to like a hunting bow. And part of it, I kind of feel like, is because the game just vomited equipment all over me every 2 seconds.
Yes.
And I got very disinterested very quickly with looking at any of it. Fine. Another quest line ended and another trip caster added to the 85 I'm already carrying around. And I'm just going to, and it's probably me being stubborn again, but I refuse to use any of them. Let me just have the one weapon I have, and it's fine.
So again, we have a Pascal problem.
Yeah. I start to notice that more and more.
I mean, so for me personally, I like the spear. I'm more of a person who likes to get close quarters in my action-ish games. So being able to, like, you know, slide under you know, a machine and then being able to like jab them from under there or like hit them from the side, I had more fun with that. But I also would remind myself that, like, no, this is Horizon, you still have to play a little strategically. Again, that's why having the bow like as your secondary option was always, to me, very helpful, because you'd have enemies where they're glowing a particular spot, for example, like the chicken ones, right? Like, you can actually go after their gizzards. And you take I don't remember their names.
I think I know exactly what you mean.
So like, they have gizzards, and if you hit the gizzards off of them, they explode, right? Or you have the ones that, like a deer that have the canisters on their butts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you shoot those off, they explode. So knowing what the parts do, you can make yourself pretty advantageous Oh, man, yeah. I just blew up a deer butt.
There is that meta to it of almost the Monster Hunter-esque thing of shooting off the different parts of especially the larger dinos that you can then get those parts and then use them to upgrade your weapons, and that it has that same sort of Monster Hunter sort of vibe to it.
Look, go ahead, Pascal.
I feel like you can really tell that the people who are in charge of, like Josh, like you're saying, like especially the bigger ones, the designing the monsters, that was so much fun. Just to, as you're battling each of like a shell snapper, those giant ass turtles, for example.
The shell walkers.
They have so much crap all over their shell and underneath, and like as you're and the battle takes a long time, but as it goes, you're starting to kind of pick up on that particular part causes this to happen. Like this is the turtle uses it for this attack. So if I manage to shoot it off, I disable that from happening. Like there is a real, like it feels like you could actually go somewhere and build these creatures. Like these are like they're designed so realistically, I guess, in a way.
Well, and I gotta say, the new monster designs in this one, I loved a lot of them. Like I was always petrified every time I ran into the tremor tusks, just because you knew you were getting squished.
Well, I mean, that's probably my favorite part of this game is just the scope and the scale of the enemies that you're facing. Like you really do feel like I am a tiny, tiny little thing that could get squished, and I have to be fast and smart and agile so much more so to just survive in this world.
Yeah. And I mean, they also gave us, for some reason in this one, the Loch Ness Monster, which had its own like unique kind of boss battle.
Oh, this is in Under Vegas is what we're talking
about? Yeah. Like, I kind of thought that was neat. I thought that one was pretty hard at times because, my God, the Loch Ness Monster is too quick. It's a really cool kind of battle with just the underwater Vegas. Actually, just seeing Las Vegas underwater the way that they did it was pretty cool. I think the setting in a weird way does harm this game a little bit, though, because, you know, you're going far west and you look at some of the areas that you're going into and like the desert was my least favorite area to go through, if I'm being honest. Like it was so frustrating half the time and it was so boring, which I get, it's a desert. But then you like go all the way down towards California and it's a jungle for some reason.
Yeah, and the fact that it's about a 5-minute walk away from Vegas is San Francisco Bay.
Yeah, a little weird. when I got to that section, I remember being like, this is a little weird, but okay. I'm going to climb this giant tower, though, which is pretty cool. The gorilla monsters that they put for this one, oh my God, they are so hard. They were so hard. And it was like watching you have to deal with like the gorilla from Rampage, because he just walks up and just clubs you. And it's like, oh boy, okay, we don't like this. We do not like Rampage.
Now I remember the baboons. Is that a different...
you're right. They're baboons. They're baboons. And they're
might have had gorillas. So it seems... like thematically appropriate to have a gorilla in there.
But yeah, like, I don't know.
I call them baboons because when you scan them, their butts light up.
That's right. No, I think they are supposed to be baboons then.
I might also be making that up. I'm not sure. That's the way it's stuck in my mind. There is a
monkey of some kind or some kind of ape.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. But no, like, again, there's a big open world here. There's a lot of really cool creatures. And I agree with Pascal that, like, some of the story parts don't hit as well as they could because you constantly have to go back to the base. That being said, what bits of the story that are there, I mean, this game does suffer from middle child syndrome, and it's very clear because who knows when we're going to get Horizon 3. The way this game ends is on such a nasty cliffhanger, so it's like, I don't know. I don't know where we're going to go.
But we know evil AI is coming for us.
Yes, we know evil AI is coming for us. But at the same time, you get a little bit of closure for some characters, and then you kind of get not enough for other ones. Like, to me, really, like, what I do like in the story is just Aloy is a character with a lot of empathy. She cares about the people around her, despite the fact that, you know, they spent the entire first game treating her like shit. She is very understanding when she meets other people and she's trying to figure out what can she do to help them. How do they, again, you're meeting people, for example, in the West who For example, they're dealing with famine. Famine's very common. They're dealing with, again, extreme weather. And she's trying to solve all these problems and believing that, you know, she can find a backup for Gaia might solve some of that. And then as you kind of go on in the game and you get the alien plot line, it kind of digresses in a the game digresses in a really weird way that I don't know if it was good is what I will say.
There's a lot more emphasis on let's get the band together for this one.
Yeah.
It needs to be a little bit, you know, it turns more ensemble than before, even though you always only play Aloy. I liked it though. Like it had a little bit of like a Magnificent Seven vibe. Like you got to assemble the seven samurai more or less, you know. And I liked all the supporting characters. I wish they had been just like more meat to them as far as like the way you interact with them. But I did really, some of them I really love. Maybe we'll get into that later anyway. But like there are some characters that kind of like stick with me, I think, a little bit past this game.
Like loved Zoe. No.
I had to think for a second who that was. No.
but Varl. Also, this game's mean to Varl.
Okay. It's cool.
Varl.
Yeah.
Varl was good.
I respect sometimes when a game is willing to put stakes and not back down on them. And it would be a little far-fetched to have the second Horizon in a row where basically, you know, everybody comes through unscathed. As long as you have a name, you have plot armor.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that, especially given a couple of the other games I've recently finished. Like, it is great that they do that. It just also hurt because he's the sweetest little cinnamon roll.
Didn't that come out of nowhere? I was like, whoa.
Yeah, no, and I cried. I remember I actually was, like, sitting in my chair, and I was sobbing because I was just like, my baby, what happened?
Hmm.
And it was done really well. Like, it I think that scene is very good at taking the player by surprise.
Yeah.
And kind of just going, the stakes are really big in this moment, but also we're going to take something from you. And there's no real, again, sometimes games give you the kernels that somebody's going to die. This bit kind of didn't give that, I found, or at least it gave the hinting that somebody could, but no, there wasn't any kernels here for us to pick up. It was literally
beta. I think you were meant to, you know, assume if anything was going to happen, it was going to be Beta, because moments before it happens, Beta basically begs Aloy, if they show up, take me out. Do not let me get captured. I want to die.
Yeah.
And Beta was literally the spare, the clone.
Yeah. What did you guys think about Beta?
Weird.
It's an interesting idea to kind of have like a different spin on what Aloy could have been, a mirror for her to actually look at as well. And I think the tension between the two was like interesting and realistic, because you would feel that way seeing like this version of yourself that is not how you want to be.
Yeah,
I can see that.
I didn't always love it. There were times it felt too belligerent for me when I was trying to carry on with like saving the world, and now you're throwing a temper tantrum.
Yes.
It got a little bit in my way. I like the resolution of it. The first time Aloy said, and it was almost like an unconscious thing, no, we're going to go save my sister. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Nice. Like I enjoyed it.
I was going to say, one of the characters I will say I really enjoyed was Regala. Like the whole plot line with Regala I thought was really fascinating, mostly because it's absolutely just, you know, caveman, you know, territory war, but just she herself I thought was interesting. Like the fact that she's looking at Aloy and she's just like, you are not better than me, but you're gonna pose a problem. Also, she's voiced by Angela Bassett.
Holy
yes
shit.
Who I have like, oh, have the biggest crush on, always have. I remember when I like was playing the game, like, this voice is very familiar, and then I was like, oh my god, it's Angela Bassett from Strange Days.
I mean, I thought it was Deborah Wilson at first, and still loved it.
Yep, it was Angela Bassett.
Mm.
And I mean,
yeah, she was cool.
She was cool.
And I like that they didn't like bitch out on her character. They gave her the end that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. Because again, all she wanted to do was obliterate Aloy. She's like, you're annoying. I want territory. Get out of my way.
Did everybody let her live and join the team for a while?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. Of course you do. What else are you gonna do?
It's one of those, you know what? Like, I like, because when you best her, like, she obviously wants you to kill her. And you're like, no, like, you bested me. You're useful. Why would I do that? Right? So, no, I liked some of the, like, the characters that we get. And, I mean, then there's, you know, Silen's storyline in this one, which I don't know if I fully loved.
It seemed like we're back to Zero Dawn in a way, like reset him. He's completely mysterious again, off the grid. You have to figure him out again.
Yep.
I honestly, I guess I lost sight of when they developed the game. I thought that they treated him the way they did, like completely as a non-entity for the first like 85% of the game because of what happened to Lance Reddick. But then I guess I realized after, like, no, that, you know, that happened. He passed away years later.
Mm-hmm. Is that not well, that was true, it. True,
right?
He passed in it was 2023.
Yeah, and when did Zero Dawn come out? When Forbidden West?
2022.
Yeah, so it was that was really weird. I would have sworn that they kind of edited him out of the game because they didn't have enough footage with the actor, kind of had to adjust the storyline, but no, that's just the way. I do like how it eventually turned though when he became a part of the group and the dynamic around him, and that was kind of neat. Like seeing sometimes, I don't know, I get like a weird like nostalgia when the old guard still kind of carries on, you know.
I think my mild frustration with his plot line is just the fact that we kind of get that little bit of rehash from Zero Dawn. I like the end result, like again, of him being a part of the team and he's actually trying to be helpful. he spends more time being like, I stupid little girl, and it's like, bro. Whereas in this one he's like, no, like, we are working towards a similar goal and we have to work together and we have to figure this out because the entities that we're dealing with are bigger than us. So, and again, just sad about Lance Reddick, you know, he's such a talented actor.
There's like no, there's no replacing that character. I don't know.
No, and that's it. I wondered that too, because again, we haven't heard anything about there being a third game. Obviously,
well,
I'm hoping there is, given how this one ends. But
the easy out is at the end of the game, he comes within like a hair's breadth of boarding the spaceship to go to Nebula 5 or wherever the hell it came from, and then. At the last minute, he kind of comes back down the ramp and says, oh, I'll stay with you. He even, I think, says something like, I'll stay here for a little while longer. So the obvious solution to that is between games, he does go off into space. And all you're left with are like his text diaries that you find throughout the next game explaining why he left after all, et cetera, right? Which I think would be consistent for his character. I wasn't an entirely satisfied when he became a, you know, like almost a softy at the very, very end. Like, no, guys, you're friends now. I'll stay. No, Silence wouldn't do that.
No, not at all.
He came back for some nebulous reason only known to him. And that has to be how they go with it for the next game.
Yeah.
And he'll take off again at a heartbeat. Yeah. No, he's great. I really hope they don't like misfire on what they do with his character. I couldn't help every time he was, you know, well, I'm playing it now after he's already died. I couldn't help every time he was in the game. I was like, God, what a loss that is. He is so much fun to just look at and listen to. Every time he's on the screen, I'm just like, give me more.
His voice is compelling, right? Like it lulls you in. And you're just like, tell me more.
I didn't realize how many video games that guy was in until he passed away.
Is it a lot?
It's a lot.
He's in Destiny. I know he's in Destiny. Oh.
He did a lot of voice work too. Like just general.
I mean, I would too if I had that voice.
Again, we have the power of the internet. Video games. He was actually quite a bit. Yeah, so he was his first video game role, just for funsies. 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand.
Okay.
And then Destiny, Quantum Break, Payday, Horizon, a lot of Destiny. Like, he is a very important character in Destiny.
Hmm.
But then, like I said, 50 Cent, Blood on the Sand.
Is he the blood or the sand?
Neither. R.I.P. Lance Riddick.
Yeah.
So you guys have talked a lot about a little bit about the story, but you kind of haven't said what the story hook of this game is.
I mean, I can read you the basics from my review. And it might be, so, I mean,
you're going to actually read the basics?
I mean, I can do it. You can do it, Pascal. It's probably clearer in your brain.
I'll try. I'm not as passionate about it as you are. Aloy leaves the land she just saved because she's on the hunt for a copy of the Gaia AI. A copy is probably not the right word for it. She wants to reboot the AI to save the land. Right? Is that pretty? Yeah, that's got to be it.
Yep.
Yeah. And oh yeah, she gets a message from Silent saying, "Hey, I'm out west. Follow me here. This is where you need to do your shit." And that kind of is what brings her there. Also, she's, you know, pissed off at Silent because he's a traitorous bastard. So she goes out west, and then that's it. Then she makes friends along the way. She finds a base, and then it's just every quest is like, "Let's go get this one of Gaia's functions back. Let's get this other function back." So the first one is the one that I think you can actually pick them. You can choose the order, but it's like heavily suggested. But one function clears up the water supply and the coastline and anything like related to water. And of course, you knew this is the one where I kept waiting for my exploration aspect. Like, when am I gonna finally get the underwater breathing thing? It's when you do the water AI, yeah. Or another AI, what is it, clears up plant life, and this is the one, yes, that deals with the red rot that's everywhere.
Yep.
And so you slowly just piece it back together, and along the way, and it doesn't take too long for this to happen, the space aliens show up. You're kind of going through, this is when you finally find a working copy of Gaia, left behind in some bunker, and just the second you pick it up, the door behind you like explodes, and in walk, yep, these like four or five humans in shiny suits, and they immediately gun for Aloy, and like it's like within seconds, like they see her, and immediately he goes, "Okay, Eric, attack, kill her," and you can't harm them. They have their shields are next level. They have space age tech. You've never seen anything like it. And with them they have another Aloy. They have a person who looks just like Aloy. So she barely escapes, and a little bit while later it turns out that they are some of the original humans that escaped Earth before it, you know, got destroyed 1,000 years ago, and now they're back from whatever planet they settled on. And it's literally them. They haven't aged. They have somehow remained alive for 1,000 years, and they're back. And it seems to be that they're back to kill everybody left on Earth.
They're also trying to get Gaia. They're trying to steal the AI so they can, yeah, move on to another world planet, and use it to, yeah, like terraform a new planet.
Well, wait, the new planet is, no, that's not something you know until the very, very end.
Well, okay, yeah.
The stated objective is that they want to terraform Earth so that it suits their needs. And which would have the effect of everybody still left alive on Earth dead. And they're like, "Yeah, fuck it. We don't care. That's how, yep, we like it." And it's like, that is so villain of the week, kind of like, what the hell? Oh, my God.
I don't know. I don't know, Pascal, given the current state of the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, but again, remember, this, this it was made a couple of years ago. But isn't it funny how, like,
prescient. just, we didn't know.
Like, oh, it's Elon, you know.
Tech bro who wants to go to space and, yeah, wants to murder, yeah, everybody.
Yeah, well. Yeah. I mean, hey, art imitates life, imitates art, imitates life.
Yeah. And Guerrilla Games just read the newspaper that day and was like, "Oh yeah, here's our sequel. Let's start." So it becomes kind of a race against time, I guess. So you have this the evil space alien human faction who's going after the exact same thing you are, and it's a race for who gets all of Gaia's pieces back together first, because the side that gets them all gets to, you know, reset Earth, I guess, basically. And it's got to be you, because if they get it first, they will wipe out the primitive human population. And that's what you're led to believe anyway. And then there's, you know, obligatory twists at the end, which are kind of neat. I kind of like it. But getting there, it's just a little bit of a chore. There's too much of go halfway across the map and get this AI, go back to base. Now go three quarters across the map and get the next AI. Now go back to base. Now go all the way across the map and get the next AI. It's a little bit too much of that for me. Didn't really help the story. But yeah, that's kind of the story. And then reveal at the end, what are they called? They're
Far Zenith.
The Far Zenith faction, right? One of them, after they kill Varl, one of them defects to your side, saves Aloy, and her reasoning is, oh, she used to be Elizabeth Sobeck's, well, friend at first, and then later, if you dig deep enough, you find out, oh, it was actually her girlfriend. And so she feels bad. She's feeling bad now because Aloy looks like her. So she wants to help, but she doesn't really, because at the end, she's the main villain, of course.
The final boss.
The final. What was it again? I think she just wanted to take Aloy and run off the two of them.
Yeah.
Kind of sick.
Is that about it? You spend 1,000 years in space, you may go crazy.
That's about it. And then it ends with the cliffhanger of, oh no!
Someone shows up and is going to steal the ship, and then he turns around and decides to come back, at least for now.
Yeah, well, and the cliffhanger is during the first game, there was the mysterious signal that brought Hades back to life, right? And in the second game, you're told, oh, it was the Far Zenith people that sent the signal. And you find out at the end, it wasn't. There's actually an even bigger, even badder AI out there in space traveling to Earth, intent on killing everybody. And they led it right to you. And now you got to deal with their shit.
Yeah, Far Zenith had developed it to do stuff for them, and then it had kind of escaped containment and turned on them and killed a bunch of them, and that's what they're running from. And so, now it's coming to Earth.
Again, see why it leaves on a bitchy cliffhanger?
Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting cliffhanger, but when are we going to see that game? Fucking knows.
It does sort of annoy me when a middle thing ends on a cliffhanger, like an Empire Strikes Back or that sort of thing. Because you never know when the third thing is going to come out or if it'll come out.
I'm content with also just kind of saying, and how the game ends on, like, we don't know how we'll defeat it, but we'll do it somehow if we stick together. And I'm happy to just say, and then the narrator slowly closes the book and he says, and so they did. The end. I don't have to know how the final battle goes. I'm good with it. Like, let's call it here.
And I mean, again, this is a who knows situation. I mean, if we're being realistic, I'm sure the third game is in development. It's kind of funny because I keep joking about the Lego game, but they did co-develop the Lego game. So who knows? ? Again, there's a lot to like in Forbidden West. And again, there's definitely some things to gripe about. But it is, like, compared to Zero Dawn, no, it is not a better game. It is very much the middle child. That doesn't discount some of the elements of the game that are really fantastically done. Again, the new monsters, fantastic. Some of the newer characters you meet, fantastic. The world, interesting enough for me. Like, again, I didn't care for the Vegas stuff, except when you were actually in the underwater area. That was really cool. Fighting Loch Ness Monster, really cool.
Did you interface with, like, the lore?
Yes. I like the lore of this series. I do.
Did you like the Vegas lore or no?
No, the Vegas lore was cool. I think I just, it's the trope of just, and you're in the desert now, and then you're in the jungle now. And it's like, I wish they had done a little bit more with it. I mean, it's the fucking Mojave. Like, there are horror stories. Give me some of those.
Did the first game have a lot of varied environments?
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't think they were as on the nose about it.
Yes, they were more subtle.
It might have been me missing something, but it wasn't until I played the DLC for the first game that I remember having my first, like, oh shit, this is a real place. It was, I don't know how many of you played the first game's DLC, but they have you going to basically, I think it's Yellowstone National Park, though you don't know it by that name. You just, at some point, you kind of put two and two together and you figure out this is, oh, that's what this fucking is. And that was, I thought that was great. But I guess it's kind of like Josh said, like once you blow your load one time and you have that reveal of like, oh God, this is post-apocalyptic, like USA.
This is America.
Yeah. Then it doesn't really have that reveal power again.
And I agree with you. Like, the second game is way too on the nose, whereas Zero Dawn is so subtle about it.
Was the first game being the United States and that sort of figuring that out a big deal?
Just to figuring out all the mysteries was kind of what it was about.
Yeah. Because there was lots of different things that you kind of had to uncover throughout the game. Again, with the way that they introduced the game to the world, you know, back at E3, they didn't really give you much other than, the world has been destroyed by climate change and capitalism. Here's all the mysteries of what has been left behind, right? Mm-hmm. And Aloy is such an outsider, so it makes it easier when you're playing the game to have that cipher element when you're discovering things.
Are you sure they even gave you that much, though?
I mean, let's be honest. I remember punching robo-dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I think was the only reason we all got excited. We're like, damn, I get to punch a robo-dinosaur.
I mean, that's what started, like, visually, when you just behold the game. Like, that's obviously what gets you in. I thought I had to dig a little bit for the whole, like, world's destroyed angle. Maybe that was just me not being fully aware of it. I don't think it was obvious. I mean, it kind of is, like, when you look at it, like, oh, yeah, obviously the world's destroyed. Like, that's kind of obvious if you look at it. But it wasn't, I don't remember that being revealed until a little ways in. You kind of had to read up on this.
Yeah.
Which that was the best, I think I said this earlier, my favorite part of the first game was digging through that stuff.
Yeah, but I feel like you get a mild sense of it, though, at the beginning of the game, that just there is a strangeness, right? Because the fact that the game attempts to kind of mimic a weird version of, like, prehistoric times. I mean, for me, when I remember seeing the trailer, that was a big part of the appeal. It's like, okay, we have this pseudo prehistoric world, but here's also the remnants of the world that was there before. And again, going through things like the cauldrons, the spaceships, you know, old army bases, stuff like that, you know, and then you're seeing it through Aloy's eyes, because to her, she's just like Ariel from the damn Little Mermaid, where everything is neat, right? She's just like, this is neat. This is cool. Blinky objects. Pew, pew, pew. Right? Mm. And it's great because there's still an innocence to her character. Whereas here in Forbidden West, you know, she's matured now. She, even in 6 months' time, she's now seen enough shit that she's going, okay, how does this now all connect?
Well, I'll tell you how it connects. Here's the first moment I realized, what the fuck is this game doing? They Forbidden West front loads its world with the first area, or this may actually even be the second area, I can't quite remember, but anyway, before you even hit the Forbidden West, you have to go through this this kind of like no man's land area in between. So nothing has happened yet plot wise other than 6 months have passed and now you just start walking. And the first settlement you get to, you discover this labor dispute between the, like, the local I don't know which real life person I should reference here, kind of like the lazy, good for nothing, power hungry, like, local mayor. You know, like the ski resort, the dean of the school, okay, like that guy, who's set up shop in this village, and he's decided everybody can't work right now. Everybody has to kind of sit down and not make a living because of reasons. And the reasons, you do get into them. Oh, there's shit. I don't remember them. They're the most boring thing that I've ever heard of in my life. And this is how your action game with robot dinosaurs part two starts. Like, it's the way that the Phantom Menace kind of gets shit on now, because, oh yeah, it's the most amazing game for movie for 7-year-olds, where you deal with a Trade Federation trade blockade, or, you know, whatever the hell it is the Jedi do in that movie. That's the That's Aloy's first big thing. You gotta oust the local labor lord and get the waters of consumerism flowing again. So much fun.
Well, maybe they wanted you to start out as a friendly neighborhood, Aloy, before going into deep conspiracies.
I mean, sure.
Remember that time Spider-Man went down to the DMV? Remember that really action-filled episode? No.
I was just making a terrible joke.
Yeah. I don't know. The plot decided to take a beat before it got seriously rolling, but it was not a good idea. I don't think it was. I got on Discord, I think I spent like 2 days on this early stuff because, you know, again, side quests, right? And I got on Discord and I said, so Horizon Forbidden West, boring? What the hell?
How dare.
I mean, luckily you got less boring after that, but what? I just don't get it.
How dare.
And despite like the flaws that it has in both like its overall plot and the slowness at times for the storytelling, like the world and the combat itself still kind of like always shown through for me. It's just like it never got dull fighting giant robot dinosaurs. And I enjoyed it from the beginning to the end of the game. The scope and scale of the combat was so much fun that I was willing to forgive any of the other foibles that the game had. It's just, you know, like it's, even though it is very much cribbing from Ubisoft, from Monster Hunter and those games, it's still managing to craft something that's unique and different. And it's all its own at the same time.
I just wanted to lean more into what makes it its own thing. Like the Horizon aspect of Horizon is great. I really would love a third game to have it open world. That's fine, but maybe a little bit more, even like more Zelda open world. I think a map full of markers is just not, I don't know, it's just not working for me with Horizon anymore. Lean away from Ubisoft, lean into Horizon. Horizon itself is great.
Yeah.
The world has been set up. Huh?
I mean, is it one of those open world games that you can kind of feel yourself getting lost in? Like, you know, I'm trying to get to this objective, but I keep seeing shiny things that go off.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to even do that. But you do miss out on a lot of, if you're playing for a story, you're going to want to probably see the side quests. And so you do have to constantly jet here, jet there, stop here, zigzag to this direction. And they're not all great or anything like that. But I mean, I was jonesing for that stuff because I just wanted it wherever I could find just narrative, you know? Mm. I think one thing that is better in this game, you guys have both said it already. You know, I don't know if this is what you meant, but when you guys keep saying the world is better, like what one thing I really didn't do it for me much in the first game was the tribes, because you have the Nora, the Karja, and the Osirim. I think that's about it. Like I think there's like the shadow Karja and stuff like that. There's the, you know, the evil version. But in this like it's almost like, I don't know, you guys remember that one tribe and their thing was they drink machine oil in the first game?
Oh yeah.
And that was the thing. Every time you just talk to people who have like machine oil dripping down their chin, like this is their thing.
Yep.
I thought the tribes were way more well done in this game. I genuinely enjoyed like seeing what's the word I'm looking for? What are those people that study like human development and human like history?
Anthropologists.
Yeah, right. From an anthropological. Am I saying that right? Whatever that word is.
Yes.
From that perspective, this was way more interesting. They have a whole. They have a tribe, the Tanakh, that are completely built around this museum that they found about the ten fighter pilots that made a name for themselves in the old war, and their culture, and some of their sayings, and their mannerisms, and like their belief system is built up on the exhibits they found in this museum, and it's constantly referenced. And I thought that was like really genius, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stuff that I find neat.
Yeah, it was really good in this game, that stuff. Or maybe that was the only example of it because I'm blanking on any others, but that was a good thing.
Was a lot of that stuff in Zero Dawn?
There was some of that in Zero Dawn, but not in the same way. Not to the same level.
Definitely not.
Zero Dawn had more of a sense of like, these are the good guys. These are the bad guys. These are the ones who like to fight. These are the ones who don't. Oh, right. You guys were, Sam, you were mentioning Zo. Well, Zo comes from the Utaru tribe, which is kind of like the peaceful farmer tribe that you interact with. But their whole thing is built around song. Their whole yep. culture is developed out of these machine songs. And it wasn't like the strongest representation of what I thought was like really interesting, but still kind of neat. And they have a council who only operates through song, and you have to interact with them once or twice. And eventually, if you follow her quest line, I almost forgot to say they worship some of the machines. They have these six or seven machines called the Land God, which are apparently machines that have short-circuited at some point because they no longer act aggressively at all. They just kind of walk around and cultivate the soil of the land, and so they're farming machines. And I guess at this point, and they're revered by this tribe as the land gods. And these machines break down, and if you do her quest to reactivate them, they start singing a song.
Yep.
Which sounds horrendous, by the way, but also cool. Oh, this is a neat moment that ties in with consistently with the world of this, this tribe.
I loved Zo and I loved all her quests. I just thought that was an interesting take. There is a lot of neat little things in the world, and the idea that her tribe is all about music was really fascinating, but they're also farmers. They are people who are trying to just make do with what little they have. So I really liked it.
Yeah. Nobody's mentioned Alva yet. She not making it onto anybody's list?
I'm trying to remember Alva, and is it?
So she's the one you find in San Francisco. She's the nerdy one.
The excitable
one. Who came from the tribe that was across the ocean, right?
So I think what's implied is what, Japan? Asia?
China, maybe? Yeah.
Hawaii, at worst?
Yeah.
We talked about Chrono Trigger on the last show, and every time Alva was on screen, I was like, oh, here's Luca. Hello, Luca. Yep. Luca's back. She is the big nerd, and she's great. I've never seen a character in a game this enthusiastic about anything before. The way that she emoted, the way her facial capture and her voice actress portrayed her delight at nerdy stuff was really fun.
Yeah, now she's coming back to me.
Now, did Sony improve any gameplay between the two sequels at all?
No, they shoved it full of more combat arenas, stealth segments. It's the same checklist, I think, of gameplay.
Okay.
Nothing but fetch quests. Go, and I said it already. The amount of loot in this game is
too much.
It's just vomit inducing.
Too much.
That's something that drives me crazy when you have the sequel that doesn't really do anything to fix some of the annoying stuff that annoyed you in the first game. And then what you guys are talking about, it sounds like some of it they made worse.
Yeah. Again, like a lot of, sequels, it's bloated. So that's the big problem here. Forbidden West is very bloated in, again, the amount of side content you can do, the amount of gear you get, and it's very easy to lose your entire life to it.
Is the side content even meaningful?
Some of it is, some of it isn't. There's just like in Assassin's Creed, you definitely have stuff where it's like, go kill those bandits or go find this MacGuffin, right? You get some of that stuff. And then you get the side quests that are more about your companions and whatnot. And yes, those are, I would say, far more meaningful. And with that, I'm going to go to bed because my appointment's at 8.
Okie dokie. So. Thank you,
thanks,
Sam.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Good night, Sam.
Night. Bye.
I'm going to assassinate that statement a little bit. I'm just going to remove the word far from it. I don't think the companion stuff is far more meaningful, but there is obviously more meaning to it. They've put some effort into making some side quests slightly more enjoyable. Last night I went back and did some post game cleanup stuff. And I went back to the ruins of Vegas and did a side quest with the guys that are down there. And it resulted in them, Aloy taking a hot balloon ride with one of them. There's this group of tinkerers and inventors that have kind of claimed Las Vegas as their own. Like they, it's a desert, but they're working on like making it a tourist attraction for the
as a tourism spot.
And so you, one of the inventions that he's come up with is what is he doesn't call it a hot air balloon, but it is, and you provide him the materials for it, and then you go for an actual ride in it, and it results in like a tornado blowing you off course and then being attacked by a monster. And so there's, you know, a little bit of meat to the bone, but is it really, does it add anything to the actual like campaign? No, not the story really either. So on that front, I would say almost all of the side content isn't really necessary. There's not that many companion quests.
Because I don't mind quote unquote meaningless side content as long as it, well, like I'm thinking about how Yakuza games, the side stories are don't really have anything to do with the overall plot, but some of them are so funny that you want to do them anyway.
Yeah, no, I would say that the fun level doesn't really come out here. I mean, only if you already enjoy the systems in the game. Like if you're like Josh and you just you adore the combat, well, that's good, because every side quest will have some sort of a forced combat encounter in it. So I mean, if that's what you enjoy, then you'll get lots of it there. And most of them also don't lead to anything worthwhile, like as far as rewards, you know. It's just another item in your collection. Mm-hmm. It really is crap.
It is kind of almost over. I mean, you can carry around like 6 different weapons at a time, and then you can modify them all and level them up. There is a lot of weapon and item bloat in the game.
You can carry around all 150 of them. It's just you can only have like 6 or 7 equipped at any time, but you can change them at any point. So you're in essence, you've got them all at all times.
There are literally 150 weapons in the game.
No, I just made it up. There's probably more.
Probably.
Because there's so many different varieties, and each one has to have a green tier, a blue tier, a purple tier. There's legendary ones that are orange, and then there's different varieties of those. And yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it probably is 150.
So they're more like Borderlands. They have different properties on them, it sounds like.
Yes, and then you can also modify them too. Yeah.
I didn't give. Like I said, I have one bow that I kind of spend a couple of resources on to level up once or twice, and that's good enough. It works just fine. I almost never use anything else because I almost never need to. Which probably means some encounters take me longer than they need to, but that's fine. I'd rather just do it that way and power through it in that, because to me the combat isn't fun enough to dig through all the options I have and you know, use the most optimal way to take on every single challenge.
The flip side of this, although it is quite bloated, Kelly, like the plus is that there are so many different types of weapons and so many different ways to play the game that you can kind of experiment around and decide what you like the best and what works best for you. So if you like playing, you know, like in stealthy and picking people off from a distance, there are some weapons that you can do that with. If you just want to like kind of blunder around and have really powerful weapons and blow things up, you could do that. There's all kinds of different ways to do it.
I somehow got it in my head that this game had like a handful of weapons that you just upgraded throughout.
Ooh, no. There's like 8 or 9 different just like classes of weapons, basically. So there are a number of different ways to play.
Bows in and of themselves have multiple different styles of bow. Uh-huh. And then bows all come in all kinds of different varieties on top of it.
Yeah.
And every, even post-game, post-credits, and I went over 100 hours on my playthrough. And last night, I unlocked a new armor type that I had not needed before or ever seen before, because I didn't have a weapon that used it before. So there's a little pop-up says, you can now craft this kind of arrow or whatever it was. And did I say armor? I meant to say like a new ammo type. And that's after 100 hours of game and credits. So, yeah.
Wow.
Because, I mean, that depth is in it, too. Like, you can always scan the enemies, look at both their weak points, but then they will also have weaknesses to different status effects, and then you can have weapons that take advantage of those weaknesses, or you can just kind of ignore that stuff and kind of like just, you know, blunder your way through blasting, and that can work too.
I think makes for a really good like YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Somebody out there has got a YouTube video where they really pick apart. Well, here's a very interesting way you can deconstruct this boss encounter. You know, like you can fuck around with separating the air blasters, or you can explode the toxic canister. There's like, and this was saying earlier, like the enemy design is really fun in that way, but when you have to do it in game 150 times, 200 times, eventually you're just going to reach the point of like, can I just hit the shiny spot that does the most damage and move on? I do not want to switch ammo types 8 times to target different pieces of, you know, I just want to get done with it. I'm bitter. I'm finding myself to be a little bit more bitter than I thought I was.
I mean, you did get 100, you did put 100 hours into the game. It couldn't have been all terrible.
Do you ever reach a point where you can just curb stomp enemies, or is that not a thing?
There is a sense of progression in the game. You definitely get more powerful as the game goes on. But I mean, against the bigger enemies, they are always going to be a threat to you. I mean, to me, that's part of what's good about it, is like you never are just like, you know, the end game over-leveled RPG character where the enemies just can't even, you know, come up, slash at you, can't do anything to you. Like, nah, these enemies can still kill you if you're not paying attention and you're messing around.
Okay.
There is a good challenge throughout. Oh, and I mean, but it still has got like, you know, like it still has like all kinds of difficulty sliders so that you can, you know, adjust it to how difficult you want the game to be. This has turned into Sel Kelly on the game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I have been curious about it for a while. It's just like many things.
You seem intrigued by like the world, and it is a very interesting world from a lore perspective.
It does really sound like an interesting world. It's something to kind of lose myself in.
Yeah. The criticism I have of the world itself, and I kind of kicking myself I didn't ask Sam this, but we've mentioned now the Las Vegas area, and it's the only one I remember in the game actually finding some actual like backstory on. If you go digging around Las Vegas, you'll find out about I can't 100% remember the man's name, some guy that in the 2030s and 2040s of the game's timeline like became a big Las Vegas magnate and kind of like was known for being like, I don't know, the Vegas guy. Like when the world went through its like first phase of like kind of like onset of world destruction, like things like microplastics and droughts and shit like that, he kind of saved Vegas and took it under its wing. And anyway, there's a bunch of stuff you can find out about just the history of the fictional history of this particular area. And considering all the real world like locales that you do get to explore, I kind of wanted more of that in other places. Like you make a whole point of going to San Francisco, and yet I didn't learn anything interesting about what supposedly happened in that entire in the Bay Area. And that's just one example. If they did it with Vegas, I don't know why they didn't do that with other places.
It is weird now that you're talking about that. I'm remembering all that stuff. Like that I think that's why it was probably one of my favorite parts of the game was the Las Vegas part, because that was so well fleshed out. And the locales in San Francisco are fleshed out. You know, there's the Transamerica Tower, there's the Presidio. There are landmarks you recognize, but there's no real story to go along with it or backstory like there was in Vegas.
And I think the first game did that way better, where it provided like where you could immerse yourself in the history of the end of the world, basically. And it was a little bit of a missed opportunity here. Like, that's the kind of stuff I always enjoyed more anyway. And it was just noticeable in its absence in a couple of places here. But like I said, to make up for it, there was a more interesting like current world to learn about.
Maybe they just ran out of time for some of that stuff.
It's totally possible I can totally imagine that being one of the backstory things, or you know,
when you have to design 500 side quests, some of that probably goes by the wayside. But And remember, they made sure to lock in that early hours labor dispute. That was vital to get into the game. Gotta have it.
You know the director wrote that. They couldn't cut it.
I mean, I'm a little salty. I'm coming off the heels of Kingdom Come 2 right before. And I'm spoiled on amazing narrative from that. So it had a lot to live up to, and it didn't quite make it. Horizon, that is.
Now, the Steam version of the game says that it's the complete edition. Was there a DLC for this?
Yes.
There is. It adds you go to Los Angeles, or what's left of it.
Okay.
Oh, Burning Shores, it's called.
Yeah. There's volcanoes and stuff.
I was going to say, is there anything interesting there?
Aloy has a romantic fling.
But nothing with Los Angeles? That souns like just an
the Hollywood sign gets destroyed.
Oh, come on.
you fight one of the far zenith people who's here, and you end up, it's an inconsequential side story, because of course it is DLC.
I mean, Los Angeles, fault line, volcanoes. Imagine the rich storytelling that you could uncover in a location like that. Nothing?
I was just thinking about what about the tar pits and what kind of
stuff
they can bring back.
That would be great.
Trying to remember. I don't remember the tar pits playing a part in it. I don't think so. I could be wrong. It has been a couple of years.
I would like to really see a scaled back Horizon 3. Enough with the world now.
We've been there, done that. We know what it is. Yeah.
And I want a new world. I want to learn about it, but enough with the side content.
You want a more focused narrative.
People aren't going to play a $70 game if it doesn't have at least 70 hours of content. You've got that hour to game to dollar ratio. And I'm being facetious here, by the way. I don't get that mentality. If you get your enjoyment out of the game, it shouldn't matter how long it is versus how much you paid for it, unless you paid, $20 for something that has five levels.
Well, the tide is shifting a little bit, right? Open world games now aren't quite suffering from the same design flaws that they of those, a couple of years, are they?
I don't think so. I think people don't necessarily want as much open world stuff as they used to, because we're growing up now and we have limited time to play.
And the kids with infinite time are all playing Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's a sweet spot. They need to dial into it. I think they blew past it for Forbidden West.
I mean, I prefer a shorter game that I don't want to end versus a longer game where I'm like, God, when is this gonna end? You know what
every
I mean?
Every day of the week. Every day of the week, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I hate the games that overstay their welcome much more than the ones who are a little on the short side. But I'm old.
I've gotten the same way. Like I said, Pirate Yakuza is a very good example, because it's like, I'm at the last chapter. Is there anything else I need to do? No? Okay. Well, I guess I'm bowing my way to the end then.
But would you enjoy, not just Pirate now, because, your point is it's a little short, but let's take any of the first seven Yakuza, the mainline Kiryu story. Yes, you get all the side stories, or mainly that, I would say. If now there were also 35 evil Yakuza bases that you can stealth through to take out the leader in each one, would you do it? would that draw you in? Like, the side stories themselves are like a breath of air. You can come up from the gangster story for some levity and storytelling and silly shit. Would you do 35 Yakuza dens that you have to crawl through slowly? I just feel like that's not the content I want in a open world game anymore.
Especially not since I hate stealth stuff with a passion.
So there's a way to do it right, and Yakuza is always, I think, been a great example of giving the content like that actually engages me when I want to take a break from the story.
Because that is one thing I also like about the Yakuza series is, you know, I can engage with the content I enjoy and avoid the content that I don't like. Mm-hmm. I like some of the dumber mini games like Dragon Cart and Crazy Taxi DoorDash, but I don't want to touch a Mahjong with a 10-foot pole.
What is this in the new one? Crazy Taxi DoorDash? What?
Yeah.
Ooh. This sounds good.
Infinite Wealth and in Pirate Yakuza. I think it's called Crazy Dash.
Is it actually Majima driving a taxi?
No, you're on a bicycle and you're delivering food, but the gameplay is literally Crazy Taxi.
That sounds fun.
The only thing it's missing is Offspring.
No, please. No more. Yeah.
I mean, find that album on YouTube and play it and you'll get the full experience.
It's enough. I've had the full experience. It's ingrained in my brain forever.
Hey, fun fact, my husband is printing me a Crazy Taxi arrow from my rearview mirror. Because I saw one on Limited Run Games for $20, and it's like, I bet I could 3D print that for free. And 1 second on Google, and it's like, yep, here's an STL. Vaughn, can you print this for me, please? Thank you.
Nice.
I think we might be done talking about Horizon. As far as price goes, it is $60 on Steam right now, and I think $50 on PSN. Goes on sale all the time for around $30. And I can't even remember if it got added to PSN Plus at some point.
Not that I remember. Oh, wait, Plus. I don't know. I'm like on basic tier, so I don't know.
I'm on basic tier too, but I do. The only reason why I'm still subbed is I like claiming the free game every month because. The free games every month because there's always something, one thing at least interesting that I've wanted to play, and I can't remember if Zero Dawn had showed up on that yet, but
it hasn't that I've seen. I would imagine physical disc might be cheaper though at this
point. I didn't get a chance to look at the physical disc. Let's see here. Something tells me most people would prefer to play it on PS5 since it has, I imagine, it runs better.
That's a question.
I think that's fair. I think that would be fair to assume.
Though I imagine that you could probably get the PS4 disc for relatively cheap.
Looks like it's $45 on Amazon right now for the PS5.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm seeing the PS4 on eBay for like $20.
Okay. That's what I was that's more along the lines of what I thought.
Try to refine by PS5 here. Oh, even 5 is as low as $20, so if you want a good deal used, just go that route. But like I said, it shows up on sale all the time. Wow, not Steam Deck supported. Probably a little bit too hot for Steam Deck.
Probably. It's probably one of those that you can like look around and like most games that even aren't Steam Deck supported. If you're willing to do some a little bit of creative work, you can get them to work.
Zero Dawn is Steam Deck supported, though.
Yeah, that's surprising. That's what I thought. I thought Zero Dawn was Steam Deck.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they probably did some stuff in Forbidden West and it doesn't play nice with this old Steam Deck.
So do you guys definitely recommend? I know Josh wants me to play the game desperately.
Really?
I don't know about desperately. But I think you probably I think you would enjoy it. It seems like it would fit in your oeuvre.
Yeah.
Even without playing even just going straight to Forbidden West.
I think I'll tell my story. I only played about half of the first game and then kind of YouTubed it and then jumped into the second game because I was just wanting something to play on the PS5. And I had a great time with it. So I would definitely recommend playing the first game first, but I think you could even go into the second one, especially with some YouTubing.
There seems to be no substantial gameplay difference between the two games. And it does sound like you kind of get different experiences with the story. I will probably do the first game first.
I think you should. Don't miss out on at least the opening, because it doesn't just dump you in. Here's Aloy, now go play. You play her upbringing for the first couple of hours. You play her as a child, and then I think it kind of it does do the fast forward, but I think you might play her in maybe one or two different stages along the way of to becoming like a young woman. And it's fucking brilliant. I I think I loved the game immediately when I was playing, like, little girl Aloy digging through an ancient ruin, like finding the different like technology that was down there waiting for her and stuff like that. And I was kind of sold immediately. I would not skip that.
Okay.
And then her coming of age story for a little bit before the shit kind of really hits the fan. So I think that's it. In terms of the two games' opening hours, I think I've made no mystery out of what I think of the sequel. That's way better in the first game.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, I appreciate games that kind of have the tutorial as the childhood. I think that's a good way to kind of introduce you to a character that you basically get to see them kind of grow up. I think that's why I liked Nier, the version with the boy, better than the version with... Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just something about that in video games that I enjoy. So
Nier Replicant, I think?
Yeah, Replicant. I was blanking on the name.
Gestalt, I think, is the other
one. Gestalt. Is the other one, but I think we're ready for the roundtable unless anybody has anything else they want to talk about.
Are we going to talk about like favorite character and stuff during the roundtable?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So let's have a brief musical interlude, then we'll come back and get into the roundtable. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable, our personal thoughts, our feelings, our favorites, our least favorites. That being said, what is your favorite moment from the game?
I don't know if it's a singular moment. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but I think like my favorite section for a lot of the reasons we talked about was the whole Dune Hollow section. And, you know, the group of characters who are trying to revive Las Vegas was just like a fun storyline with lots of lore built around, you know, the history of Vegas in that, you know, new future of, like you said, Pascal, the 2030s and 2040s.
From what I recall, yeah.
That's the one that sticks out in my mind still now, you know, 2-3 years later.
And Pascal, you feel the same, or did you have a different favorite moment?
Wait, I want to ask first, from what I was trying to think of the Las Vegas section, you liked it despite the one guy in their troop that's the storyteller and the very the very special way he has of talking that didn't bother you?
No, I don't. Well, I don't remember it anyway.
Oh,
it's faded anyway.
Stemmer. There's three of them. Stemmer, yeah, is the one I'm talking about, and he's the one. He speaks of himself in the third person because his thing is that he tells stories, and the storyteller approached the young warrior to ask her this question, a question she could not refuse, a question she was eager to hear. And then, like, this is how he conveys everything. That doesn't kind of grate on your nerves?
Obviously not.
You don't remember?
I'm remembering it as you say it, but I didn't remember it until you said it.
That doesn't sound too annoying.
No? Okay. I don't know. I really was trying to find a favorite moment, but I think I'm just gonna pick the cheesy stuff. Like, and I think I've already mentioned them, to be honest, but the moment where your whole crew goes out to do what you think is like basically like the winning stroke of this of the war against the Far Zenus, which is you finally get enough of your of Gaia's sub functions back together to where she says she can now capture Hephaestus, because that's the big bad AI that you're kind of pursuing throughout this game, and the only way that the only chance of success you figure you have is if everybody splits up and goes to different what are these what are the things called, the different the different bases.
Is that the cauldrons, or am I thinking
the cauldrons? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're carrying out the actual operation at your location, your friends are all setting off diversions at other cauldrons, like spread out throughout the land. And the whole point is so that that you're basically confusing the far zenith group and they can't track you down. And this, I mean, it's nothing, it's not gameplay. It's just a cinematic, but everybody's kind of riding a whatever they're called, like a charger, like a ram mount kind of. They're all, the whole crew is riding through the desert. And then little by little, they all like sheer off to the left or to the right and head in their own directions. And they all kind of give like a, oh man, it's so cheesy. It's like Michael Bay directed the sequence. They all kind of give a wave or a salute to Aloy as they like leave the group and head off into their own destinations. But it does have like a little bit of that feeling of the Mass Effect suicide mission, you know, where you've got the team, but now you kind of spread your ranks out. And the implication is it's, you know, it's dangerous. Like everybody's kind of on their own and anything could happen. And it does, it turns out, because that's where Varro bites it. So I don't know, stuff like that is still kind of cool. It's one of the two only times that I got to really enjoy the team for what it was. Like I was lamenting this earlier that what a great team, and it isn't being utilized very often as a team, with the only other one being the final battle, like the assault on the far zenith base was also pretty cool.
That is kind of the problem with the setup of the game, that you is just Aloy and one other character. You don't have like an RPG party for everyone to kind of like join in and bounce off of and experience together the same way you do in like a Mass Effect.
Yeah. Not until the final mission, I would say. That's the only other time it really where it involves gameplay, where the different teams are like kind of in the same area, just scattered around, and everybody's in like radio contact, and you hear updates from other groups as they accomplish their little objectives. And you might see fighting like over the rise, and you know that's where one of your teams is at and stuff like that. So I'll pick those as my favorite. I got one for funniest also, but this is like very very unfunny funny. This was unfortunately not meant to be funny, but as good as the game looks, and it does look gorgeous, there's still those moments where they just quite miss the uncanny valley. So anytime Aloy flashes like a real toothy Joker grin at the beginning or end of a conversation at any NPC is unintentionally hilarious. For all the times they do it so well, there are plenty of moments where it, you know, it's just that one odd movement to her face or her lips, and it just turns into a grimace more than anything.
We still haven't gotten photorealistic graphics just yet, sounds like.
Whereas they, I mean, as far as the character models, they usually are.
Yeah.
Right.
In this game, that's going to be something I'll praise again here in a minute. But facial gestures are just so hard to get right. And when every conversation ends with one of them, yeah, you're going to have some stinkers in there.
So did you guys have a favorite character?
Sure did.
Go for it.
I've made a point to not mention them at all yet, just to kind of like test the waters to see, and they haven't come up for anybody else yet either. Mine was Catalo. He's the warrior that loses his arm at the assault early on, the first time Regalis' forces kind of come down and tear you a new one.
Yeah.
And you encounter him again later as you, I think the next time you meet with him is when you go to like the Tanakh, I don't know what to call it, base, I guess, their hometown, which is the museum, the flight museum. And the chief kind of pairs you up with him, and he's disdainful, and he's clearly he doesn't trust you as an outsider. He remembers like the the battle that he lost his arm in, and like you just represent, Aloy represents everything to him that he hates and mistrusts, and like he basically thinks his chief is a fool for even allowing Aloy anywhere near their lands, like, you know, these are sacred lands and so on and so on. And then over the course of your mission with him, and even past that point, once he joins you at the base and you kind of have conversations with him, little by little he starts coming around, and begrudgingly at first he respects Aloy, and then that turns, and like the moment I really knew, I was like, oh, this is my guy, is probably probably far, far later on when they're discussing like the final battle or, you know, something like that. And Aloy point blank asks him something like, are you sure you're willing to go with this plan that I have? Or, you know, something like that. And just no pause whatsoever. Immediately he says, well, I trust you. And this is your plan, so I'm down for it. And I was like, oh, this I'm satisfied by the character development, such as it is. So yeah, I really liked him.
He was a really good character, yeah.
And I was looking up his actor because I also love the look of him, his voice actor, which is the same as like the actual actor I think that they do the mocap with and get the facial likeness. I don't know if it's just the main cast or if everybody's kind of like that, but I was like, this is not anybody I remember ever having seen before, and I'm not sure like where this actor is from, but it's like, wow, he just kind of with a cast including people like Lance Reddick and Angela Bassett, and this guy stood out to me. I thought it was really cool.
I think for me, like, because I only played like half of the first game and then kind of YouTube the end so I could move on to the second game when it came out on PS5. I think I really enjoyed like hanging around with Erend, who was a standout from the first game, but I didn't get to spend enough time with him. So it was so much fun to kind of like have him still be a big part of this game too.
Awesome. Go ahead.
Did you enjoy when Erend got into like death metal?
So he did have some of the better little vignettes in the main base, because he also had that one where he was playing like, what was it, their version of chess with one of the other characters.
Strike.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think of Strike?
It was okay for a little side game.
How would you, what's your take on it? It's, what is it? It's like a tactics game, right?
Yeah.
Like a little mini, XCOM or Final Fantasy Tactics a little bit.
Yeah.
It was like, you did enjoy it? I hated it.
It was okay.
I just don't like the side content for everything from the stuff we've already said to, I completely forgot about Strike, but even this, there's a freaking board game that you get to play and I didn't enjoy it. Now that's a fail.
Cause you love board games, don't you?
I've been spoiled on a lot of good side games in other games lately. Sea of Stars had that really good like a little mini battle game where you have two different guys kind of duking it out, and Kingdom Come has a really fun dice gambling game that I would just spend like days and days just doing nothing but playing that. I hate Strike so much.
Are you a big fan of Gwent?
I've tried it, and to be honest, I don't understand the rules of it. So. or maybe I do, and I don't like them. Like the couple of times I've tried playing Gwent, because I've dabbled with The Witcher. To be honest, like that is one of my goals soon, to like really get to The Witcher games. But I've also played the Gwent, like actual Gwent game, and I said to myself, I must be misunderstanding this, because if this really is how the rules go, then I don't understand why people like this. Like they, I don't know. This isn't a Gwen episode, so I won't keep going on.
No, it's fine. But, I was just curious.
Yeah, no. I should. You'd think I would.
Because I'll never forget being really into Hearthstone and my husband being like, well, I mean, it's not bad, but I just like magic better. Magic the Gathering better. And I'm like, okay, well, show me Magic the Gathering. And once I got into that, I couldn't go back.
So what about Gwent? What do you think about that?
I have not had a chance to try Gwent yet.
So I'd be curious, because I mean, obviously I know Magic is kind of my frame of reference as well. So if you ever try it, I'd like to know.
Okay.
Is it just me? Is it, do you feel the same way? Like, it's almost like you took Magic and then kind of messed it up a little bit. That was my take on Gwent. Josh, what do you think of the chief character? Chief Akaro, I think his name was.
I'm like you. I enjoyed that whole section of them kind of like riffing off of the old, I think it was like a U.S. military museum, wasn't it? With all of you know, like living off of all of the creeds that they found in this museum.
Yeah, I mean, I did. And then, but specifically, like, if I was thinking, like, he's not enough for me to pick him as a main character that like is my favorite. I already, you know, have my choice, but I kind of want to shoehorn him in as like a second. Like, it's just another, I'm not even sure if this is like, I can credit the game with this. This is probably just the guy. Like, they picked an actor who just looks so goddamn interesting. And fair enough, they probably also gave him like a really cool costume and, you know, face paint and stuff like that to make him real tribal. But like, every time another character, every time he was on the screen, just like I just couldn't like get enough of looking at him. Like, oh, there are some amazing looking cast members in this. Not just that they look real nice, but like they really have a personality all over their faces.
I was thinking about this. I think like Horizon is one of those things where the overall story maybe is just kind of like is not of elite level, but that the acting talent helps elevate it above its actual, you know, like baseline of what it should be. All of the actors and their performances are for almost in uniformly like really good, and it helps take what otherwise would be kind of very mediocre and make it still fairly satisfying. I don't know, like for me that is like, you know, like taking something like the TV show House, which was just like very drab procedural medical show, but Hugh Laurie was amazing, you know, was an amazing actor and just like elevates it well above what it should have been. And that there's a little bit of that going on in this game too.
I mean, Ashley Birch to me is like so great as as Aloy. But that's not, she's not the facial capture, is she?
I don't that's think an actual, so.
You do think so?
I don't think so. I'm not sure though. I haven't looked.
Yeah, Aloy is the one that's different, right? She has a different actress. I'm not too well versed on that. I didn't actually look that up, but I mean, I've seen Ashley Birch, and that is not Ashley Birch.
Yes, different character, different actress. Yeah.
Interesting that they did that for Aloy.
So what about your favorite weapons?
None?
Oh, yeah. None? You had your hunter's bow, right?
Take them all. I don't want them. Yeah, my hunter's bow. But not because I like, oh, I love this weapon. No, just fine. I'll use it. Whatever.
For me, I very much got into the bolt blasters, that machine gun like thing that was, you know, like you could just like tear into enemies with that. Of course, you were like a sitting duck and you would get stomped by some of the bigger enemies, so you kind of had to think through how you were going to use it.
Is that one of the ones where you tear off the enemy? The weapon and use it?
No, well, I mean that is what something. It's similar to that, but no. Like this is very much like a weapon you could have and carry around and make weapon, you know, like make ammo for. The ones you would tear off of enemies would kind of play similar, although they would just have like a set, you know, ammo, and once it was gone, it was gone.
Yeah, isn't it always convenient that they will fire on you for hours, but as soon as you attach that weapon, it happens to be down to its last five shots.
Of course, and that's
if you even make it over to pick it up.
Yeah, don't get whacked by a tail or stomped on or whatever.
Maybe there's a second component that loads it that doesn't drop.
There you go.
Oh, okay. not like for us to use, but within the game.
In the beast, yeah. There you go. Lore.
Listen, I got really sick of the 15-second, like, get swiped by a tail, falling over myself animation all the time, especially in the big battles. Like, every time Aloy gets sideswiped by a machine, it takes ages to stand back up again. And by then, the camera is just all over the place, and who knows where, you know, you're probably just lined up for the next, like, tail whip. Sometimes it feels a little bit unfair. That would maybe be the one thing I would say change out about the combat. I would like less of a, I don't know, what would that be called? Like,
stagger or whatever?
Yeah, stagger animation, yeah. Like, it's really significant.
It definitely could, and it definitely could stink depending on the terrain, especially if you're in kind of like tight quarters with nowhere to go. It could be frustrating when you were fighting like a larger enemy, and it could just, you know, like whack you, and then it's like, what do I do now, you know? Like, the enemy is taking up basically all the area to move. What am I supposed to do?
Mashing buttons and your character isn't moving at all. I'm with you. I hate that in games. You're screaming at the TV, get up, you idiot.
No, you're hit again. No.
Did you say your favorite weapon, Josh?
Yes, bolt blasters.
Okay, gotcha. And then final question. Did you have any associative memories with the game?
I do, but I'll let Josh go first.
Well, we kind of already talked about it a little bit, Kelly. Like, you were remembering this. Like, I'm amazed it stuck in your memory too. Like, the playing that was still the end of COVID. I'm trying to think when this would have been. This would have been post vaccine, but still kind of like not going out much. Mm-hmm. I think around that time. So we were still doing lots of like sitting around playing video games over Discord. And yeah, like, I remember that multiple times you guys going like, what in the bleep are you playing? Because I'm just sitting there with the, you know, the haptics just like shaking and making an absolute racket. And you're like, oh, no, I'm just playing Horizon. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's making an absolute racket right now. Yeah, sorry about that.
I mean, it sounded like you were playing with a bandsaw. That's how loud it would come over on the Discord call.
Well, because I have, the things muted. So, like it wasn't blaring music, but,
yeah,
you know, in some respects, that's even worse.
Did it sound like you were building a thunder jaw back there?
Basically, yeah.
I wonder if it's entirely possible if some of the earlier PS5 controllers had, like, the haptics were louder and they toned that down some.
It's possible. Well, you know how that is. It's mm-hmm. It's a new console. It's, hey, we have to show off every single possible thing that this controller does. And therefore we have to, you know, jam that feature in every place that we can. And you know, it has been done worse in other games. But yeah, this game still has that going on.
I mean, I kind of enjoyed it in Alan Wake 2. It had kind of the what do you not the haptic the kind of tension with
the tension it, on the triggers. Yeah. Well, yeah. I like the tension on the triggers when you're kind of like pulling back the bow. It kind of like helps get you into the kind of the RPG sort of mode, the role playing mode. But yeah, that, you know, they can just go overboard with the vibrations on, you know, like you're getting whacked by an enemy and it just goes like absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I tend to turn like the intense vibrations off because it scares the crap out of my poor cats when I'm playing.
That is one thing we didn't get around to mentioning, but the accessibility options are just ridiculous in this game. It just has like the accessibility part of the menu is just gigantic. You can do all kinds of different things with it. You can adjust all the different, you know, you can turn off all the different features, the haptics in the controller. You can, you know, adjust things to however it makes it, you know, makes it better for you to play.
I love that stuff now. Mainly because when stuff starts getting tough, I turn those on just so that I can have an easier time getting through the rest of the game.
Uh-huh. Well, and I like, you know, the older I get, the more I love that granularity where it may just be like one little thing that I want to change to improve it without just like having it be like, is it easy or is it hard? You know, like, no, I just want to change this one thing that's annoying me.
And Pascal, what was your associative memory?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I do have a heavy association with this and not of a good kind. But it isn't the game's fault. I'll put that up front because I powered through a lot of it this past week and I spent the majority of that week sick. So I was off of work, but I did come down with, I mean, self-diagnosed, but I think it was a case of some sort of food poisoning or what have you.
Oh, no.
But, you know, a backtrack will happen when a backtrack happens. And so I had to find my way to the credits and I was not going to make concessions on the side quest and shit like that. So on we go. But the effect of that is, I would, you know, lay on the couch with my controller playing in the middle of having a fever or just, you know, feeling very unwell. And then that, those sensations, for better or worse, kind of transferred over to the game for me. You know, I remember one of the return trips to the base from, I was coming out of the San Francisco area. So going all the way from the west and traveling all the way back to the mountain base, which is, you know, and I think I was on foot at the time because I didn't have a mount currently like assigned to me or whatever. So it's a long, long run. And I was absolutely going through some sort of delirium. This was like 1-2 in the morning. Fever had been kind of going on for several hours. I was delirious for sure because my head was swimming, and in the game it was going through its like coming out of its night cycle and like slowly starting into like the dawn of the next morning. So there was like some twilight lighting effects coming up on the horizon, and I just remember kind of having like an out of body experience because my in the real world my head was just swimming back and forth while I'm watching these like trippy like lighting effects, and I couldn't figure out why. Oh, that's right. I came across some like mounts, and I was trying to, you know, use Aloy's stick to override them so I could like mount them, and it wouldn't let me. And it's because they were already like tamed by the locals or whatever. They were already tame, but I couldn't figure it out. And I just remember being there like very perplexed in my strange state of mind, like, why can't I get on this mount? What is happening right now? And it was like I was tripping is what I was doing. And so unfortunately now, you know, all that stuff is over. But every time I think about going back to like maybe just playing like one more like little side quest or something, like I haven't done Katalo's quest where you get him an arm back, or at least I don't actually know if you do get him an arm back, but the quest is you're supposed to find a replace like a prosthetic arm for him, or you build him an arm or whatever. And I kind of want to do it because he's my favorite character. But every time I think about going back to Horizon, I get nauseous in my stomach because I have those, you know, all those memories have kind of transferred onto the game for me.
I gotta say thank you for trucking through at the very least. I mean, don't torture yourself on behalf of Backtrack. But yeah, I was gonna ask, like, how were you able to play that? Because last time I had food poisoning, I was so nauseous I could eat anything, and the idea of playing a 3D game just seemed like a puke waiting to happen, because I get motion sickness when I play some 3D games, amplified by how already nauseous I am.
Well, there were times when I didn't play. There were times when the PS5 got turned off for sure, but those must have been the better moments when I felt somewhat more up to playing. And well, like I said, you know, I was like, oh, Backtrack's coming, gotta get there. I was happy to do it because I mean I wanted to play the game anyway, and like I said, damn it, I was gonna play it my way and not cut corners and fast travel and miss out on side content. That was never going to happen.
Well, I'm very
bad timing.
I'm very happy that you persevered, and also very happy that you didn't hurt yourself.
Nothing permanent. Has it ever happened to you where, like, I mean, you know, an 80-hour game is maybe a little extreme, but like you'll watch a movie when you're sick, and then all you can think of the next 3 years, every time that movie gets mentioned, you just remember how sick it makes you feel. No? That's just me?
Yeah. No, because I'll never forget having a really bad abscess in my mouth, and I didn't know that at the time, because the dentist kind of blew it off as allergies, and playing Final Fantasy X-2 while my mouth is just in so much pain that I just want to like rip my lower jaw off. So my dad gives me a Valium, and I'm playing Final Fantasy X-2, and next thing I know, I wake up and the game over screen's there. Because the volume kicked in and I was trying to get to a save point. That was the last thing I remember before I just dropped like a rock. And ever since then, that part of the game, it was like the huge maze in Final Fantasy X-2 with the Tonberries. It's like I get, my mouth starts to hurt and I get sleepy.
Wow.
10-2. Makes your mouth hurt.
Mm-hmm. Which dress sphere were you? Was the gang in at the time?
I think the gunner dress. One of them had the gunner dress sphere. I know that because of the trick that you can do with catnip and whatever the gunner ability is, where you can just do 9,999 damage like over and over again if your hit points are critical.
I will admit there is a Final Fantasy X-2 poster in my game room on the wall. I'll let you guess at like how appropriate it is.
Is it the one that came with the guide?
Well, yeah, okay. so it's not very inappropriate, but okay. it's risque, maybe the good word for it. I think maybe I would classify it as risque. The posing is very intentional, let's say it that way.
I am not surprised given the outfits that those girls have in that game, but I still loved it.
You know, I never did, but given what came later in several entries, maybe I should go back and give those a replay. I'll probably enjoy them more now because you never know how good you had it.
That's very true. Well, I do believe that's a show, unless anybody has anything else they want to talk about.
Not this week.
Oh, we have an exciting month next month. It is Atelier April. It's actually kind of hard to say. Atelier April? Atelier April?
Atelier April.
Spelling.
Yeah, don't ask.
But yeah, so first show is going to be Eska and Logi. Or no, I'm sorry, the Dusk Trilogy. I said Eska and Logi because that was the one that I had planned on playing and then couldn't get to it. And then Ryza 2 and 3. We kind of decided to combine those two because, according to Matt, they were very similar. Am I right, Matt?
Gameplay mechanics-wise, yes. Story, absolutely not. And the way the story was presented was not. But, I mean, literally the alchemy and the, what am I thinking, the battle system and everything was exactly the same between 2 and 3. So, I mean, we can talk the two different plots or whatever and the way they handle the world. Because it was very, very different between 2 and 3. But I mean, literally every other system, most of the cast is the same. You're making the same items, the same everything in the same way. And so, I mean, it's we talk gameplay and 90% of it's the same. And then it'll just have two different plots. You know, it'd be like talking Dragon Quest 2 and, I don't know, 2 and 4 or something like that. You know, it's sure you got different party members and the way you go about it is the same, but the battle system is the exact same and the you buy an item, you buy this, you do it this way. So they were easy to combine. One was different. One was, you know, they were figuring things out with Ryza 1. And then by 2, they knew what they wanted to do. And presented the story in a different way, but kept everything the same. So the Venn diagrams overlap pretty well.
Yeah. So we can look forward to that. And then after that's going to be Monster Collecting May.
Woo.
I won't spoil those entries yet. You can probably figure out what we will talk about, given what we haven't talked about. Doing a little bit of sleuth work with past shows, but I'm still going to tease it just because I can. Thank you, Sam, who had to leave for bedtime. And thank you, Josh and Pascal, for hanging out with us. And you guys definitely have sold me on this game. I just need time. You would have thought that backtrack homework would have motivated me, but I had other homework I was working on, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Just play it for the story in the world. Don't get the full 100% game experience. It's not worth it.
Now, if a game has kind of slow side quests or side quests that don't really mean anything, I tend to just avoid them or skip all the text in them because I honestly don't care. But if I'm invested in a story, then I will 100% it. So it's just going to depend on how the game kind of clicks with me, you know? But yeah. Something tells me I'm going to end up skipping a lot of side quest text or skipping a lot of side quests entirely. And of course, thank you to Matt, who I could not do this show without. Still doing some testing on Skype replacements. We tested a Discord bot tonight, and I don't know how we feel about it. Also, might end up just spending money on Zoom. Really haven't come to a decision yet, unfortunately. So yeah, just an update on that. But thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us. Join us in a pair of weeks for the start of Atelier April, and have a good rest of your week.